This is CICK News. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Dan Messick. Each week, we provide an update about events and issues developing right across Northwest BC. CICK News is made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. CICK Smithers Community Radio is on the dial at 93.9 FM, or you can listen online at smithersradio.com, and we are broadcasting from the unceded Gidindim territory, home of the Wet'suwet'en Nation. Right on the show today, we're starting a new segment here on CICK News called The Scrum. It will give us a chance to connect with other journalists working in the region, stories they're developing, and different perspectives on the vast issues we as journalists deal with day to day here in Northwest BC. This week on The Scrum, we speak with friend and fellow journalist Amanda Follett-Hosgood. She's currently the Northern correspondent for thetie.com. But Amanda has been working in the region for more than 15 years and has covered everything from day trip diaries in the winelands of the Okanagan to fly fishing tales on the Bulkley River to reporting from the front lines of the Wet'suwet'en Nation's fight to protect their traditional lands. She calls Smithers home, and we had a moment to catch up on the steps of the CICK train car in Central Park.
My name's Amanda Follett-Hosgood. I'm the Northern BC reporter for the Tyee, and we're sitting here outside the CICK train car in beautiful Smithers on Wet'suwet'en territory.
And watching really dark clouds come towards us. But we'll see what happens with that. We wanted to do this segment that we're calling The Scrum and talk to other journalists that are working in the region and see what's going on. I know we all work on different stories and sometimes the same story and all have a different perspective on these things. But let's maybe start with a little bit of background. Like, when did you first end up in the Bulkley Valley?
I came to Smithers, or to the Bulkley Valley, to visit in 2006. I came to house sit for a friend. I had been living in Canmore, Alberta. So I spent a few months here, and I went back to Canmore with the plan of staying there. And as soon as I got back, somebody said, if you really like Smithers, you should go see how you feel about spending a winter there. So I was like, you're right. So I turned around and drove back, and I just never left. Here I am, nice. 15 years later.
Yeah, it kind of happens that way for a lot of people, I think. So you did some journalism work before then. You have a degree. So tell me a little bit about your background in journalism and where you were at when you first showed up here, because coming as a freelance journalist into small communities is not something normal people usually do.
Yeah. So I did my undergrad in journalism at Carleton University and moved out west to, a small Alberta town. And there weren't a whole lot of journalism opportunities there. So I got into actually having a lot of fun, enjoying the outdoors, went traveling. And then it was while I was traveling that I realized how much I loved telling stories. And I so happened to have this handy degree to fall back on. So when I got back to Canada, I started pursuing freelance work and put in some applications with a local paper, and I got a job at the Canmore Leader in the Banff Craig and Canyon. Worked there for about 5 years as a reporter and the assistant editor until I moved to Smithers.
Nice. So maybe tell me a little bit about your experience working here in the region. Recently you joined the Tyee, which is a change. You've been a freelancer for a while and now you're their Northern correspondent. And you've covered a lot of different things over the years and written a lot of different features and hard news stories. You covered the Wet'suwet'en blockades and RCMP action the last couple of years. So maybe tell me a little bit about background and some of the work you've done in the region.
Yeah, so when I moved here, I thought I was done with community news. I was done with community reporting and small town newspapers. So I focused on my freelance writing for close to 15 years. I wrote for magazines and I did a lot of communications work for local organizations. And I'd written for the Tyee a handful of times back around 2007, 2008, back when it was still a fairly new publication and online publications generally were pretty new. I got away from it for about 10 years and then I sent them a pitch a few years ago that they accepted. And it just kind of ramped up from there. And the Wet'suwet'en conflict happened a year and a half ago, and I spent a lot of time out there on the Maurice FSR covering that and covering the arrests. And so last summer they offered me a full-time position.
Nice. Yeah. How's that been going?
Great. I mean, I so appreciate that they value Northern stories, because I feel like so much of the mainstream news coverage is about what happens in the Lower Mainland or Victoria. And when they talk about the North, it's about resource extraction, and it often loses sight of the people who live here.
So tell me, what are some of the stories that you've covered so far over the last, what, has it been a full year yet?
Started full-time beginning of September. So it was this time last year, I was still part-time. So over the past year, I've covered some stuff that's been happening at UMBC, the ups and downs of our Northern University. I've continued to cover what's happening on Wet'suwet'en territory over pipeline and related issues. I've covered some forestry stuff, old growth logging, that kind of thing.
There was one story that really stood out recently with Jessica McCallum Miller, the councillor and terrace that resigned, first Indigenous person to be on terrace council and resigned, you know, due to some pretty serious issues. Maybe give us some background of that, because we're going to be speaking with Jessica as well. So maybe tell us a little bit about what you uncovered there and you know, how it was to approach someone like that, you know, thoughtful journalism, someone who obviously has some trauma because of dealing with some, you know, unruly or not great experiences on council. So what was it like to be thoughtful about wanting to talk to Jessica about some of what was going on at Terrace Council?
Yeah, well, she first came to my attention when she resigned from council, and she posted her resignation letter to her Facebook, and it talked about how being on that council had affected her mental health and the need to take care of herself. And so I sent her a message and just recognized it was something that I'd heard several times. And so it sort of, yeah, recognized the bigger pattern of what she was saying, and I reached out to her to see if she would talk to me. And at that time, she just said that she was looking after herself and needed some time, and I said I would check in with her later. So then several months later, Mumalak Kagak, who's the MP for Nunavut, announced that she was not going to seek re-election. And in her speech in the House of Commons, she touched on a lot of the same points that Jessica had spoken about. So I reached out to Jessica again to see if it was time to do something on the bigger picture of how Indigenous women were coping in positions of power in politics. And she agreed. So we chatted for that article. I wasn't able to connect with Mumalak for that article. I spoke with Jody Wilson-Raybould, who at that time said she was going to stay in politics, has since announced that she won't seek re-election. And then I submitted my article, and it mentioned something that Jessica had said, that council had tried to investigate her over an interview she'd done with the CBC. And it kind of escaped me. I mentioned it in the article, but it was my editor who flagged it and said, this is a big assertion that she's making. I think we need to look into this a little more, and I think maybe we need to reach out to the mayor and find out what was happening. And it was kind of the 11th hour. So what we did was we pulled that mention out of that particular piece, and I followed up with Jessica and learned more about her experience, and did manage to, after that, connect with, you know, the mayor and the counselor who had suggested she be investigated. Yeah, I think it was, you know, my takeaway from that whole thing was it's really hard to be the lone voice in a group like that. Like, I look at Smithers Council and how it's different, and it certainly has both progressive and conservative voices, but I think it's fairly balanced across the spectrum. Mm. So no matter where you are, you're going to have somebody who likely supports your viewpoints. And I think in Jessica's case, she was just constantly being shouted down. And I think the whole idea of investigating a counselor for speaking out about, she spoke about her concerns around having enough resources for Indigenous women fleeing violence in light of growing industrialization in Terrace. And I think there are legitimate concerns, even if maybe she didn't follow exact process. Mm-hmm. They certainly didn't warrant an investigation. And so there was definitely a sense that that she was being shouted down on counsel.
Yeah, it's quite peculiar that, you know, in most municipalities, they don't have Indigenous candidates, Indigenous councillors. You know, if we take a look at the North, I don't think there is one. She was one, and kind of didn't seem to be welcomed, according to her, and at least she felt that way. And so, you know, the idea that we don't really, aren't accepting in certain communities because there are other interests is really interesting in this story. And so we're going to speak with Jessica as well, because I think it's good to get this word out. And so I guess maybe that's another question. You know, we have few resources, journalistic resources in the North here, reporting on, you know, some pretty intense issues, some pretty tough issues, also covering a range of things. Like, we have industry, we have missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. We also have, you know, just the general issues that Northern communities face, because we have, you know, difficult winters. We don't get a lot of the cut of the pie from the coffers in the province. And so a lot of the times, you know, it's a little bit more effort to live here. But we sometimes cover the same stories. And so what's your approach, and how do you cover a story differently than, you know, say like the Narwhal, which also covers, you know, similar environmental issues. But if, you know, something else pops up with CBC, you know, perfect case was up at, you know, 27, and there was, you know, all the media from down south. You know, how do you differentiate yourself from that business and kind of change the angle to be a little bit more northern, a little bit more thoughtful about your reporting?
Yeah, I think thoughtful is a good word, because I think outlets like the CBC, they can grab that breaking news. I mean, we do breaking news, but what I like at the Tie U is I also have the freedom to step back and see how other outlets are going to cover it. Mm. And then you look at, well, what's not being talked about, what angles aren't being looked at. And I think sometimes if it's a northern story, the breaking news doesn't capture the bigger context and the nuance of actually living here. Mm. So I guess that's where I see my role, is that I don't need to have a story out that afternoon. I can take some time to give it more thought, give it more research, and do something a little bit more in depth. And there's a place for both of those. I mean, I'd put the Narwhal into that category too, of doing more long form, in-depth reporting. Where the Narwhal differs from the Tai'i is that they're really exclusively focused on the environment. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, on the one hand, I have a sense of what Matt at the Narwhal might cover and may not cover. But sometimes we cover the same issues and we cover them differently. So, you know, you're looking at more than one perspective, which I think also adds value.
Yeah, definitely. I guess we got time for a couple other things. I guess the first is, you know, over the last number of years, things have really changed in terms of how we do journalism. You mentioned, you know, 15 years ago when websites and social media was very, very new. It's only been 15 years, better part of 15 years. And same ways, I mean, I started my career around that time, and you know, Facebook was brand new, but we never really imagined it being as much of a part of the communication highway as it is now, and where people consume news and information. But how have things changed for you over the last number of years, and especially with the pandemic? Have you had to adapt to some of that business?
Yeah, one thing I was saying to somebody, I think just yesterday, was, you know, it's been pre-pandemic since I last wrote a print article, but I remember even then, this is going back a year and a half or 2 years ago, it felt really limiting, which is interesting, because I think, you know, 15 years ago when I wrote for the Tai'i, it was kind of this like, oh, I don't get that magazine in the mail, I don't get to keep it and touch it, and but now that, you know, I can't hyperlink for more context or link to this report. Yeah. And I'm like, I appreciate the online medium. I think there's a lot of value in it. I think there's a lot of drawbacks too. I've been, just this past weekend, hanging out on Twitter and noticing how polarized every discussion is. Like, I was like, man, there's very little if any, middle ground on a lot of this discussion. But that's a whole other interview. And otherwise, for the pandemic, I mean, I've done a lot of reporting from my desk and from my office, but I'm grateful that I can do that. It still works. And now that things are opening up a bit, it's really great to go out and meet up with people in person. And I'm trying to do that more and more.
Yeah, no doubt. Same ways, which is why we're doing this outside the rail car, not over the phone or Zoom. I guess last thing, you know, we're going to try to do more of this. We're going to try to have more little mini scrums, and we're going to talk to other journalists in the region as well, to talk to them about, you know, what they're covering, also how they see things differently. Maybe tell us quickly, because we hope that we can touch base with you again, maybe in like a month or a couple of months, to see what's going on at that point. We'll be into fall almost, and the pandemic might take another turn. Who knows? It's a roller coaster. But what do you got coming up? Is there something you can kind of let us in on that you're working on, or something that you would like to work on? What's kind of cooking that hasn't been reported yet?
Well, I think the texts that you can hear going off are me trying to connect with Facundo Gastiazoro over the mural that's just gone up on Smithers Friendship Center, which was a huge collaborative process with families of missing and murdered Indigenous women, hereditary chiefs, Friendship Center staff, to come up with a mural honoring missing and murdered women. So I'm looking forward to that one. I've also got a piece coming up in the next couple days about the latest turn of events for UNBC and the latest controversy there, which is a great example of there being no middle ground on some of these debates. So that was an interesting one to research on multiple levels.
No doubt. We'll look out for that one on thetai.com. Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks.
Well, Amanda, thanks so much. Yeah. We'll talk to you again soon.
Great chatting with you.
Yeah.
That was Amanda Follett-Hosgood, Northern correspondent for thetai.com. Of course, if you want to learn more about Amanda, you can check out her website at amandafollett.com, or of course, read her latest story on the Tai, and we will check in with Amanda at a later date. Thanks again for tuning in to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook at CICK News. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at skeenastrong.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks again to our producer, Pam Hassan, and all of our roving reporters. I'm Dan Messick. Thanks for listening.